Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, off the coast of Somalia, where much of the world's oil traffic sails toward the Suez Canal. Pirates are on a roll, brazenly boarding ships, taking hostages and ransoming their way to big money on one of the world's most important sea lanes. But 10 days ago, when Somali pirates hijacked a Ukrainian ship, they got more than they bargained for: tanks, grenade launchers, piles of ammunition, deadly booty, and things got complicated. Now, U.S. warships are circling and a Russian frigate is on the way. This hour, On Point: pirates, global order fraying off the Horn of Africa, and a high seas crisis on the world stage. You can join the conversation: why the spike in piracy, and can we have globalization, global trade, with global piracy on a tear? I spoke earlier with Jeffrey Gettleman, East Africa Bureau Chief for the New York Times. He's a former Afghanistan war correspondent. He joins me now from an island near the coast of Somalia. Jeffrey Gettleman, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Good to have you, Jeffrey. Yeah, now, you're on the Kenyan island of Lamu. That's very near the Somali coast. I think you're on a boat, and we hear that. What's the current status of the Ukrainian ship stuffed with arms that was hijacked late last month, Jeffrey?
The standoff continues. We're facing a really serious situation because there's a lot of pressure building on both sides and a lot of discord. The ship was hijacked about 10 days ago, and it's still being held by about 30 to 50 pirates off the coast of Somalia. The ship is surrounded by 7 to 10 U.S. naval ships, and a Russian frigate is on its way. The pirates are demanding $20 million and have refused to negotiate or to go down in price or to release the hostages until the money is given to them. Right now, the ship owners, the insurance companies, and other entities involved on the Ukrainian side are trying to figure out a way out of it, which most likely will mean paying millions of dollars in ransom. However, there really isn't a lot of unity among the side of the ship owners about what to do and how much to pay. On the other side, the pirates, too, are divided. There are different clans represented in different business interests, and I think they're trying to figure out how they can get as much money as possible without this totally blowing up.
Jeffrey, 7 to 10 U.S. warships and a Russian frigate on the way. That sounds like a lot of firepower. Why are they negotiating? I know they've cornered this ship, but they're standing off. Why are they negotiating instead of just taking it?
Well, I think the plan is this. There's a lot of concern about the arms on board. As soon as the news got out, this ship was carrying 33 tanks, 150 grenade launchers, anti-aircraft guns, and other armaments. People got really worried. The fear was that the pirates might offload this equipment and sell it to Islamist insurgents who are fighting Somalia's weak transitional government and day by day are gobbling up territory across the country. The pirates, though, have refused to offload the arms. They say they're not in it for the weapons. They purely want the money. I spoke to them on phone last week by satellite phone, and they kept reiterating that. They said, you know what, we don't want any trouble with the United States. We don't want any trouble with Russia. We just want our money. This has happened dozens of times this year, dozens of times last year. It's a well-established, highly organized, mafioso-like business in Somalia. The pirates hijack ships, and then they contact the ship owners, and they ransom them back for millions of dollars. It keeps happening in the Indian Ocean and the Gulf of Aden off the coast of Somalia. So the warships are basically there to make sure none of the equipment is offloaded, and so far that hasn't happened.
So the arms still on the ship, but the standoff goes on. We can hear you buzzing across the water there near the Somali border. I have a wire story here, Jeffrey, that says just in the last 24 hours, there have been 4 more pirate attacks off Somalia. These failed one time when the ladder just wasn't long enough to get up the side. But no stand down on the pirate side in Somalia, so close to the right along the Gulf of Aden, which, of course, feeds into the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. This is major international maritime lanes. Why hasn't this piracy been stopped before it got to a case like this?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really amazed that this problem has gone on and on like it has for so long. The real problem is there's no law on the land in Somalia. That's what we're looking at. It doesn't really have to do with what's happening on the seas. This is a function of the chaos and the anarchy and the violence and confusion that has reigned in Somalia since 1991. Ironically, in 2006, an Islamist administration that briefly ruled Somalia had actually put an end to the piracy problem. They used their clan connections to get to these business interests that are behind the piracy, and they urged them to stop. And in a couple cases, they actually seized pirated ships and put people on trial to prove that they were serious. So the real problem stems from the problems on land in Somalia. The transitional federal government is basically feckless. They have absolutely no power or authority in the country. They're only there by force, and not even force of their own, but force of the Ethiopian troops that are occupying Somalia. So the transitional federal government can't do anything about this piracy problem. And until somebody brings stability to Somalia across the country on land, we're probably going to see this piracy problem continue, because the coastline is incredibly long. It's 1,880 miles. And there's no way even dozens of naval ships can patrol that or control that if there's total chaos on land.
There's also a complicated story behind the arms on this Ukrainian vessel, where they're bound for, where it was said they were bound for. What are the politics and backstory to this particular lethal load of weaponry, Jeffrey?
Yeah, there's a big controversy about exactly where these weapons were going. The Kenyan government quickly claimed that they were headed to Kenya. There's no doubt that the weapons were shipped from Ukraine to Mombasa, Kenya's major port. The question is, what was going to happen to them after that? Evidence emerged in days that followed the announcement that the weapons were most likely destined for South Sudan. South Sudan is an autonomous region of Sudan, controlled by a force of former rebels that fought a long liberation war against the northern Khartoum government. And right now they're building up their military. Now, there is an arms embargo over Sudan, and there are complications about bringing weapons into the country, even into the south. So the Kenyans may have been concerned that what they were doing was illegal. And I've looked into this, and it's pretty complicated. It's not clear if it was legal or not. But whatever happened, the Kenyans wanted to keep the secret. Another thing is, Kenya played a sort of peace brokering role in the North-South Sudan conflict. And so they may be very wary to jeopardize the relation with Northern Sudan and be seen as an arms supplier to Southern Sudan because of all this.
Jeffrey, why aren't the pirates intimidated by the U.S. Navy force that's been shown already? Russians on the way. You've talked with a spokesman. They actually have a spokesman, and you've talked with the spokesman for the pirates. What does he say about their attitude, their outlook on this standoff?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy there's even such thing as pirate PR, but there is. These guys are incredibly media savvy. They know how to play the game. Basically, they're not intimidated because they have hostages. They know that no amount of force can free the hostages very easily. That ship is packed with explosives. It's got 20 crew members, which are essentially human shields in this circumstance. So it would be very difficult to do a commando raid and take out the pirates without harming the crew members. And the pirates know this. They also know that they've institutionalized this whole process of seizing ships, taking hostages, and getting million-dollar ransoms. So to them, this is nothing unusual. It's business as usual, actually.
Is there a chance that they will still get away with millions in ransom on this ship and the business just rolls on, the pirate business?
Well, that's what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is the best solution to this specific case is to pay the ransom. It's too difficult and complicated to do anything but that. That's the problem with this specific case. However, I think it has galvanized a lot of attention and concern for piracy in general. So the diplomats and international sources that I'm talking to here in Kenya, they say, let's pay this ransom, let's extract ourselves from this situation, and then let's go up to these guys' hard.
Jeffrey, you're there on the coast, not far from the Somali coast, and we've been hearing your boat buzzing and the wind blowing there. What's the attitude along the Horn of Africa toward these pirates? Are they seen as, you know, bloodthirsty bandits, brigands, or heroes? Or what is the local attitude toward them?
Well, I think a lot of Kenyans are kind of in awe, in a way, of the gall of these guys to seize a big ship, continue holding it, and basically hold the world's two most powerful navies at bay right now. So people in Kenya, where I am right now, they think this is crazy. They think, why is this going on so long? How are these pirates able to keep doing this time and time again? And, you know, they're sort of amused by the fact that they're probably going to get away with this. People in Somalia, though, they're sophisticated enough to know that these pirates are criminals. They claim to be guardians of Somalia's coast. And they do have a good case that there's been a lot of illegal fishing and dumping off the coast of Somalia for years because there's been no Navy to patrol the coastline. So the pirates have a case to say that, yes, there have been problems off the coast of Somalia. However, their response to hijack any old ship, whether it's a fishing trawler, a yacht, a United Nations food ship carrying much-needed food into Somalia, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And most Somalis know that. So I think the hope is there will be some central government, some authority that gets control of the country and puts an end to this criminal enterprise, because it makes it more expensive to do any type of business in Somalia, to bring in cell phones, to bring in food, to bring in vegetable oil, to bring in clothes. Piracy has really crippled shipping in and out of Somalia, and I think a lot of people are totally fed up with it.
And not just in Somalia, but through the Gulf of Aden on a major shipping corridor for global oil traffic. Jeffrey Gettleman, on a boat near the Somali coast off the Kenyan island of Lamu with the New York Times. Really great of you to join us. We're very grateful to you. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking about high-stakes piracy off the Horn of Africa, pirates, ransom, and global shipping in trouble, and what it tells us about global security and failed states. We had that incredible conversation with Jeffrey Gettleman on a boat right out in these waters or near them. Some sound coming out of this standoff. The captain of the Ukrainian ship, the Faina, appears to have died from heart failure after the pirates' takeover, but a crew member told the Somali language news service, RAAD-TV International, on Friday that there have been no other casualties.
My name is Nikolsky Victor, and condition of the crew and ship approximately is normal. My crew is in normal condition, without any illness.
There, the voice of one of the hostages on that Ukrainian ship off the African coast. Last Wednesday, Somalia's ambassador to Moscow encouraged the Kremlin to step into the conflict, join in with U.S. warships.
We are especially in fighting Russia and giving special status to Russian warships to help Somalia, first of all, to fight against the pirates.
Somalia calling on Russia to help fight against the pirates right there. Joining us right now for some perspective on what's going on here, it's quite a story, Roger Middleton. He's a program, a consultant and researcher for the Africa Program at Chatham House, author of Piracy in Somalia, Threatening Global Trade, Feeding Local Wars. Roger Middleton, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from New York City, Dr. J. Peter Pham, director of the Nelson Institute for International and Public Affairs at James Madison University. Dr. Pham, thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be with you, Tom.
Roger Middleton, first to you. I mean, it is kind of incredible what's going on here. Ship after ship after ship taken this year, and now we've got one that suddenly has big navies, the U.S. Navy anyway, and Russian Navy on the way. Why did it take a Ukrainian ship full of arms to get the attention of big powers here?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly the reason why it's getting so much attention this time. The vast majority of ships that have been captured to date have been things like Nigerian palm oil tankers, Iranian cargo vessels, tugboats which were making their way up to Russia to break ice. I mean, much smaller vessels with much less valuable cargo. So it's this cargo, this particular cargo, the tanks and the RPGs and the ammunition that has awoken the interest of the international community of America and of Russia and the rest of the world. So whereas before people have been worried and annoyed by it, and I've certainly argued in the past that it should have been very concerned by it, it's only this big news story that seems to have really driven the point home to people that this is actually very, very dangerous for the rest of the world.
Peter Pham, I would have thought that would already be clear. You write that 11% of the world's seaborne petroleum coming out of the Mideast, mainly headed up toward the Suez Canal, goes through these waters infested with Somali pirates, that they are holding hijacked vessels in Somali ports, already flying flags of China, Egypt, Iran, Japan, Malaysia, Nigeria, Panama, South Korea, Thailand. I mean, they've got practically a UN of hijacked ships there already, Peter Pham.
Yes. Two points. One, as Ms. Rilton has pointed out, up to now, it's been less attention paid because the ship owners and insurers, quite frankly, have been willing to pay these ransoms up to $1 million per vessel. It's certainly less than they would have to pay if the vessel was lost altogether, which would be in the upwards of 20 plus million U.S. dollars. So in a way, there's a certain enabling that's been taking place on the part of ship owners and insurers. It's the easy way out. The second point is, because these ransoms have been paid, part of the money goes back to Somalia and to literally feeding people and tribal allegiances, et cetera. But some of the money the pirates have reinvested in more sophisticated equipment, armament. And so whereas previously the piracy question could have been avoided, if you will, by ships simply sailing further off the coast at greater length, now we're seeing attacks at 200, 250 nautical miles offshore. So there's no longer a safe zone one could sail through.
They're using the big money to upgrade their arsenals and going after bigger and bigger targets. Let's get a voice from Somalia. We've got Abdullahi calling from Boston, Somalia. I think, Abdullahi, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Somalia has, I just want to talk about this. This is something that was not discussed even at the beginning. I think it was modern-day pirates terrorizing Somalia. I think that was not right. I just want to straighten out the record here. Somalia hasn't have, as you said, didn't have a almost two decades in the government to protect their coastal lines. And what we have is that Somalia has become two decades a dumping ground for industrial waste. It's also become a free-for-all fishing. Gentleman you have on the other side was saying that there's UN flags all over. Those were the fisheries that are illegally fishing for the coastal line. And that two decades, the native fisheries haven't had any. It become after tsunami that they even don't have means to fish, and there's no fish. They're overfished already. So this is what they have resorted to protect their coastal line and over fisheries and dumping ground. And what happened is that when they started this doing it, they were meant just to get other fisheries out of their coastal line. But I think it spilled off now where they have to what needs to be done. I just want to add this is that what needs to be done, if there is this UN or EU, we have a NATO coming all over the place now. If they want to protect the lines, fishery line, the ships that are going through the Indian Ocean, they have to also protect the rights for that 12 nautical mile of Somali coastline.
Right. Abdullahi, you raise a lot of fascinating history. And let me put it to my guests. Roger Middleton, first to you. Abdullahi is Somali. He says, look, this was self-defense. When the government fell apart in Somalia, they had tuna-rich waters off the country there, plundered by commercial fleets from all over the world, industrial dumping going on. I mean, the first instance of this, I think he's correct that at first it was Somali fishermen trying to defend their home turf.
I think there's a lot of truth in this argument, this anti-illegal fishing, anti-illegal dumping argument. You've got to remember who these guys are who are carrying out the act of piracy. Now, in the past, they would have been fishermen or they would have been nomadic farmers along Somalia's coast, and they've been pushed out of those traditional industries, out of farming by the drought and by the war, and out of fishing by, as your caller rightly identified, massive illegal fishing of Somali waters. And pirates have used this, and they are using it in this instance and in the past, as an excuse for their acts of piracy. But I think it's not quite so simple. Although the reason why there are young men available for pirates to use in their crews is because of this partially. But the real driver behind the growth in piracy and why so many are doing it is these massive ransom payments that are being paid now. If you can make $1 million between 20 of you, say, in a typical pirate action, mm-hmm. Compared with an average, you know, annual income in Somalia of less than $1,000, you know, even once you've paid your costs and paid off local warlords and paid off various people, there are still, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per pirate. And that's a massive amount of money in a country like Somalia. So that's really the big driver behind it. But I do accept that if the international community wants to stamp out piracy in Somalia, doing something about illegal fishing and about illegal dumping is really, really important. And in fact, should be an important issue in any case, even if there was no piracy problem.
Peter Pham, I want to get you on that, but we've got quite a voyage underway here. We heard earlier from the waters off southern Somalia there. We're joined now from Bahrain, headquarters for the U.S. Navy's 5th Fleet, headquarters in Bahrain, by Lieutenant Nathan Christensen. He's deputy spokesman for the U.S. Navy 5th Fleet Headquarters. Lieutenant Christensen, thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Tom, very much.
Can you give us the latest on this standoff between U.S. ships and the Somali pirates on board the Ukrainian ship? Are the U.S. ships just standing by, and if so, waiting for what?
Well, currently we have several U.S. ships in the vicinity of the motor vessel Faina, which is anchored off the Somali coast near the town of Hobyo. As I'm sure you're well aware, the actual motor vessel itself was attacked on the 25th of September, mm-hmm. And has a crew of 21 people. And basically, our ships have been on station monitoring the situation since it's been anchored off the coast of Somalia.
What are the forward plans? Are you negotiating with the pirates? Are your crews talking with them? Are you waiting for something?
Well, our primary mission right now, we are monitoring the situation closely. You know, obviously, we are, you know, very concerned about the crew that's aboard, as well as the cargo. I mean, you know, this is, you know, a pretty significant cargo that they have aboard, the tanks and the other equipment. And so what our goal is to do now is just to stand by and watch and not allow the offload of any cargo on the ship. We have established basic bridge-to-bridge communication with the ship itself, but we are not participating in any kind of negotiations between the pirates and the shipping company. That's occurring independently of U.S. Navy.
They've got 33 T-72 Soviet-style tanks, rocket-propelled grenades, 23 anti-aircraft guns, tons of ammunition, 17 Ukrainians, 3 Russians, 1 Latvian on board. There's a Russian frigate on its way. When do you expect it to arrive, and do you think it will also stand by, or might it simply attack?
Well, you know, I will tell you, we have not had any communication with the Russian Navy. We really believe it's going to take some time before it arrives in the region. I mean, it left, you know, the Baltic Sea, you know, over a week ago. And again, we haven't had any kind of specific communication with them. So, you know, just kind of looking at the map, I mean, we expect it to be some time before they actually arrive here. As to what will occur when they actually arrive on station, we will, you know, coordinate with them. I can't obviously speculate on anything that may happen or anything that they might do itself. But, you know, I will tell you that we will continue to remain on station as long as necessary.
Lieutenant Christensen, in normal times, when there's not a freighter full of arms that's been hijacked, pirated, what kind of U.S. naval presence is in this area, these waters that are plagued by Somali pirates? Do we always have ships on station there, or is it just for this event?
Well, you know, I will tell you that the U.S. Navy has been operating here in the Gulf, the Arabian Gulf and the Arabian Sea for over 60 years. Obviously, that's some time. So the U.S. naval forces are certainly not new to the region. What we are doing, we not only have U.S. ships, but we operate as part of a coalition, a combined maritime forces here. And so we have some 20 nations that work together to do a myriad of operations. What our intent is here is to deter destabilizing activities in order to create what we call a lawful maritime order, and that includes several different types of missions. I mean, you know, there's drug smuggling that goes on here, there's human smuggling, there's weapons smuggling. Obviously, you know, we're concerned about keeping, you know, the sea lines of communication open, as we call it, and so that the trade of the region, the commerce of the region, you know, can flow freely. And I mean, out of the Strait of Hormuz, for example, I think it's about 40% of the world's oil. Out of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, I think it's somewhere around 10%. So obviously, the trade that comes out of here is, you know, something that not only impacts the region, not only the United States, but the entire world. And so that's our broader mission. Again, you know, looking to create, you know, a lawful maritime order.
A lawful maritime order. Lieutenant Christensen, we have questions for you there in Bahrain from listeners here in the U.S. Let me go to one, if I may. Nick in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Nick, you're on the air with Lieutenant Nathan Christensen.
How are you doing, Tom?
Pretty well.
Actually, I really didn't listen to the question. The lieutenant, I had more of a comment, and the lieutenant pretty much hit everything I was going to say on the head. Because as I was listening to the show, you guys had made it sound as if the U.S. Navy had no presence there. And I know we've been doing operations for a long time over there. And anti-piracy operations is a big deal for the Navy.
Are you in the Navy, Nick? Have you seen service in this region?
I have friends who are.
Right. Lieutenant Christensen, for all that attention that Nick points to and you've pointed to as well, it seems as though from news reports the situation is deteriorating pretty badly here. Do you have enough resources to keep that lawful maritime order off Somalia?
Well, you know, that's certainly something we're concerned about. I mean, our forces patrol an area of 2.5 million square miles. You know, our forces, you know, with some of the coalition assets, we have about three dozen ships, you know, who operate here. So you're absolutely right. It's a huge area. And, you know, apportionment is obviously, you know, something that we look to. And obviously we can't be, you know, every place at once here. So one of the things I'll tell you, you know, the piracy angle has really, you know, increased, especially in news reporting, a lot recently. And so one of the things we're doing is we're working with the IMO and the IMB and you know, the other international organizations to try and, you know, raise the importance of you know, the problem of piracy itself. I mean, piracy is a problem that starts ashore. It's an international problem. It's an international, you know, requires an international solution. So it's something that we can't do on our own, something the coalition can't do on its own. It requires, you know, a much broader response in order to help, you know, solve the epidemic that is piracy today.
Are you confident that you're going to be able to keep these heavy arms on this ship and out of the hands of those who may want them on the African mainland, Lieutenant?
Well, I will tell you that we will not allow the offload of anything to occur from the motor vessel Faina itself.
So it's sealed, at least for now, but not solved. Lieutenant Nathan Christensen in Bahrain, Deputy Spokesman for the U.S. Navy's 5th Fleet Headquarters there. Lieutenant, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, Tom.
You too. Roger Middleton in London, what do you hear in that report?
Well, I think the lieutenant pointed out some important facts there about the international presence in the Gulf of Aden, not least the enormous area in the Gulf of Aden, the Indian Ocean and the Arabian Sea that the combined Task Force 150 has to cover, which is why it's relatively pleasing that the European Union announced last week that they're likely to be sending a naval force to the region. They've already established a coordination cell to help with the coordination efforts against piracy. But now they're actually committing some force to the region, but I understand it's likely to be three vessels. And given the enormous area we're covering, that may not make an enormous amount of difference. Because bear in mind, from sighting a pirate vessel coming towards you to being boarded, the average time gap is only about 15 minutes. So if there isn't a naval vessel with a helicopter ready within about 10 nautical miles of you, you have very little chance of being rescued. So the more ships there are, the better for shipping passing through the Gulf of Aden and along Somalia's coast, really.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about high-stakes piracy off the Horn of Africa, pirates, ransom, and global shipping in trouble, and what it tells us about global security and failed states. All kinds of reports coming out here. We just heard from the U.S. Navy, which has 7 to 10 vessels standing by, a Russian frigate on the way. The Somali government reportedly has given Russia and the U.S. permission to attack. Somali Islamic insurgent group Al-Shabaab has advised the pirates to burn the ship if ransom isn't paid, making everybody wonder about the pirates' allegiances there. All kinds of questions. Roger Middleton joins us from London. He's a consultant researcher for the African program at Chatham House there, author of Piracy in Somalia. J. Peter Pham joins us from New York City. He's director of the Nelson Institute for International and Public Affairs at James Madison University. Let's get a call from Idaho. Victor in Pocatello, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm less concerned about the piracy than I am concerned about Russian and U.S. Battleships entering an area together. A couple of weeks ago, we had two U.S. helicopters crash into each other. I don't think it's a good idea to have these battleships come in there. If they start unloading and America attacks them and Russia says, hey, wait a second, you're attacking our equipment, what's going to happen there? I mean, this is the equipment I understand was going from Russia to Venezuela that's kind of seen as an enemy of America.
Yeah, it does sound like a really dicey situation, and this, of course, at the same time that, yes, indeed, Russian ships are on their way to Venezuela for some kind of maneuvers there, kind of unprecedented in itself. Peter Pham, what about these two navies alongside each other? I was surprised to hear Lieutenant Christensen say from Bahrain that they haven't talked with the Russians. All they know is that the ship is on its way. Does it look like something, to your mind, that will get well coordinated when and if that ship arrives on the scene, if it's things aren't solved before that, or is it dangerous?
Well, I have great confidence in the professionalism of the commanders on the scene, both American and Russian, once they arrive there. The interests that the U.S. and Russia have are complementing each other in this particular incident, and so I don't anticipate any sort of concern. I understand the concern that the caller from Idaho might have, but I think here we have our interests dovetail. Both Russia and the United States have no interest in seeing the cargo offloaded, and I think they'll coordinate their actions appropriately. This is an area, by the way, which ships of many nations, military vessels and others, have operated in for a number of years, and especially since 9/11 with the Task Force 150. So there's been a bit of coordination as vessels coming and going. A number of other countries have vessels in the area, and they're well coordinated. So I expect the professionalism of the seamen to come forward.
On the other hand, Russia and the U.S. Haven't exactly had the best relations lately. Roger, what is this Task Force 150? Is it UN organized or something else?
It's a coalition of the willing task force. So it was established in the run-up to the Iraq War. So it's not a UN force as such. However, it represents a range of international forces, including British and Canadian and some other European.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a range of forces there. There's also some other countries sending naval ships. For example, Malaysia will be sending three frigates to the Gulf of Aden to escort Malaysian ships through the Gulf of Aden. They've had several of their tankers attacked and several boats captured and their seamen put at risk, so the government has decided this is the way to solve it. I don't think that's practical for every nation in the world to do.
Big money and big business here. I want to get to some more questions, if I may, forgive me, but I've got Jay from Pompano Beach, Florida, on the line. Hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I've got a quick solution and a very inexpensive one. Any ship plying these dangerous waters, if they would just put four deck guns, fore and aft, starboard and port, because they only get that 15-minute window of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Any vessel approaching them, they could fire a warning shot over their bow, and if they continue approaching them, then just blow them out of the water. And it wouldn't cost much to have those four deck guns to do this. Simple solution and very cost-effective.
Jay, let us pick it up. Peter Pham, first to you. Deck guns fore and aft and blaze away if the pirates are bearing down on these ships. Is that practical?
Well, I think the caller's intuition is correct. A number of the ship owners really do need to do more for their own security. A number of them have installed devices, electric fences to prevent boarding of their vessels, more advanced warning, and in some cases even security on board. But it's a matter of cost effectiveness, and unfortunately many of these ship owners have chosen not to take responsibility. And so I think the caller's intuition is basically correct. Whether we want every merchant vessel to be armed, that's another question. But certainly the issue of greater security awareness and more investment in security on the part of ship owners would certainly be helpful.
Roger Middleton, give us a sense of how this piracy works. Where do the pirates hang out following this traffic? How do they track what's coming? I read somewhere that it appeared they may have been tipped off to the Ukrainian ship coming. Do they have I've also read they have a mothership or maybe more than one that they'll take off from out at sea. Can there be so many pirates that all these ships are at risk? And if you armed the merchant vessels, would that be enough? Would that solve the problem?
Okay. Yeah, well, the pirates themselves, they come from that northeastern region of Somalia called Puntland. It's incredibly poor and barren. So we can see the motivation for them, these huge million-dollar payments. They operate in very small skiffs, about 6 meter long plastic boats that they use with large outboard engines, very fast. But those have a limited range. So as you mentioned there, this mothership idea, what they'll do is they'll catch a fishing trawler or something similar close to shore and then use that and take that further out to sea, maybe 200-300 nautical miles out, and use that as a staging post. So from there, they have a base at sea that they can jump off and go chasing after anything that looks inviting for them. So that's sort of how they operate.
And how do they board? How do they actually take a ship? And do the ships tend to offer any resistance?
Yeah.
Or because they're insured and they don't want to put their lives on the line, they just throw up the grappling hook and climb on?
Well, it depends how well they catch them unawares. I think Dr. Pham there identified one of these problems. Many shipping companies recently, as the economic times have got harsher and fuel costs have risen, they've cut down on their crew sizes, so they aren't able to maintain a 24-hour watch. So they don't necessarily have as much warning as would be desirable when one of these attacks are happening. But assuming that they are able to see the pirates coming, they generally take evasive action. I've heard, for example, of one tugboat that put itself into a spin, going round and round and round and round, and the pirates were unable to board. But normally the pirates will come up to the ship, firing their automatic weapons, firing their rocket-propelled grenade launchers. It's very scary. And they may even come up in a pincer movement, one on either side. And ships will normally try and avoid them, try and move around or get away. But pirates tend to target ships that are quite slow, ships that have low sides. So a slow, low-sided ship, the pirates come alongside and will literally just jump on board. They may use some form of grappling iron or rope or something to help them. So generally, attacking a low-sided ship, they can jump on board. Now, this most recent Ukrainian tank container Freighter. Ship that's been attacked, she has much higher sides. So the pirates, it's still not totally clear what happened, but I think they've started to use, and this we've seen in other instances where the pirates have started using heavier weaponry and more aggressive tactics to scare the ship into stopping, and then they're able to climb up the ladders and so on. So a range of tactics, but the worrying sign is that they're getting more aggressive and they're attacking more and more difficult ships for them to get on board.
Peter Pham, what about oil tankers themselves? Of course, the Gulf of Aden is right on the trail of oil from the Middle East, up then to the Red Sea, between Yemen and Djibouti, up into the Red Sea through the Suez Canal. Are tankers vulnerable, or are they too massive for these skiffs to take on?
Well, to date, they have not taken on tankers, but there's nothing that would prevent them from doing so in the future. I think mainly their targets have been targets of opportunity to date, and I think it's really a matter of time unless the problem is arrested and addressed at its root causes before a tanker is taken.
Let's get Steve in West Haven, Connecticut. Steve, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I just want to make a comment that I think that arming merchant ships, at first, I even took the bait. It sounded like a great idea, but I really think it's a terrible idea. Think of this. Who's qualified to have a gun of that size on that ship? All that ammunition, that's going to be pulling into ports like New Haven Harbor, right next to where I live, and Liverpool, England, and, who wants that? We have navies, and one of the reasons we have navies is to ensure safe shipping so people can, do commercial things with their shipping, we have merchant things. Why don't we do something? Has anyone thought of the idea of like a sleeper ship, a ship that looks like a commercial merchant ship or a fishing ship or something pirates would want aboard, when in fact it is someone's navy, and when the pirates attack it, they get a big surprise.
It sounds like right out of the movies, but maybe it would work. Roger Middleton, our caller, is worried about arming up all these merchant ships who then, of course, come into ports. It's not like it's easy to drop your guns at the door if you've got big guns fore and aft. No. I mean, there are implications of arming merchant ships.
I think your caller is right there. I mean, apart from anything else, it's illegal to carry weaponry on merchant ships then for their own defense. And he's right. It's much better to have navies or coast guards who are qualified to do this thing, which is why in the Chatham House paper you alluded to earlier that we brought out recently, we suggest things like, for example, why not look at a UN-mandated and controlled coast guard for Somalia to work alongside the international naval presence? Because, frankly, the naval presence is never going to be big enough, however much we may like it to. It will never be big enough to completely stamp out Somali piracy. And a coast guard can arrest and put down pirates as well, but can also address some of these other issues that your first caller alluded to, you know, illegal fishing and illegal dumping, things that give the pirates an excuse, but not the primary motivation for their activities. So I think ideas like that need to be looked at and could be very helpful.
Peter Palm, what about the notion from the caller of a disguised Navy ship who presents a target and then, I guess, blazes away or takes the pirates prisoner? Is that practical? Is that just sound romantic?
Well, it may work on one or two occasions, but, you know, one shouldn't write off the pirates as simpletons who wouldn't eventually catch on. But I'd like to address an issue that Roger just brought up, which is the Coast Guard for Somalia. The thing we need to keep in mind, even though the United Nations goes through the pretense of pretending there's a government in Somalia, let's face it, as Jeff Gettleman said at the beginning of the program, what we have there is the 14th transitional government since 1991. It's a regime that has next to no legitimacy, has no real authority, and in fact, late as this morning, there was a report from the Associated Press where the Deputy Ports Minister, Abdul Qadir Musa Yusuf, admitted the government officials were complicit in the piracy. So we don't have an ally on land that can assist with this. So I think part of the problem is that problem of governance on the land. And unfortunately, what you have on land, this government which has supposedly given permission to the international community to deal with the pirates, is itself complicit with the pirates.
And there's a problem when nations come unraveled. Let's get one more call from Nashville, from Ibrahim. Ibrahim, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. This is Ibrahim from Somalia. The loneliness of Somalia is due to the Somali people. I understand that. But here's the problem. At the same time, we don't address those ships that come from other countries that dump what we call nuclear waste, or steal the Somali coast of their fishery and all that stuff.
Right.
We ignore all those things, okay? But we just talk only about pirates taking ships. You understand these pirates are people who are having a problem. They are hungry. Their country is in poverty. And that thing never happened before in the previous. But nobody addresses that. All these things that are happening, they're dumping their waste, the nuclear waste coming from all these countries, and we've got ships coming from Southeast Asia, fishery in Somalia.
Yeah, Ibrahim, we've got the picture. Our time grows short, but we heard that point, and we hear it again loud and clear from you. I mean, there was clearly, has been abuse that's gone on here. Once Somalia didn't have the means to patrol its own coast, of course, Roger Middleton, the pirates themselves have described themselves as a kind of coast guard. But it goes right back, as you and Peter Pham say, to what's going on land. Without a solution there, you don't have a solution at sea. And I guess my question is, this isn't the only venue where this is going on. Straits of Malacca and elsewhere, piracy on a real uptick.
Yeah.
I mean, we have an economy based on global trade. That means a whole lot of ships moving in lots of areas. If we don't hold global order together at the same time, it's not only is it bad for the Somali people, but the global system seems to me to take on a kind of real problem in its flank there.
Absolutely, Tom. You're right on the button there. I mean, this is a big threat to global trade. The other most dangerous waters in the world are in Nigeria, of course, and of course then in the Malacca Straits as well. And all of these are important trade areas, either for oil or for trade routes, as in Malacca and the Gulf of Aden. And when these are threatened, it really puts a cost on trade. For example, there's a really very serious talk now in the shipping community of diverting trade that would have gone through the Gulf of Aden and through the Suez Canal, diverting that around South Africa, so the whole way around Africa, which would add several weeks, if 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks, depending how fast your boat is, to the journey from China or India to Europe, or from the Middle East to North America and to Europe. So we're already very worried about inflation. We already have lots of people losing their jobs in the developed world. So anything that's going to add to the cost of your Christmas presents, add to the cost of the petrol you put in the car or the heating you use for your house, that should really be of grave concern to us. And I think up till this point, and doubt there are many who would disagree, the international community hasn't taken maritime security off the Somali coast seriously enough. And now we're beginning to see the what happens when you say, oh, well, it's only 20, it's only 15, it's only 10 ships a year. And now we've seen 60 and rising. And this problem is growing. And unless something is done, it's going to really start affecting the ordinary, you know, the ordinary people the whole way around the world.
Sounds like the 18th or 19th century, but it's the dawn of the 21st, and it's kind of incredible. We'll watch that story off the coast of Somalia with U.S. Navy and Russian frigate on its way. I'm very grateful to each of you for helping us understand what's going on. Roger Middleton at the Africa Program at the Chatham House in London. Roger, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
And Dr. J. Peter Pham, in New York City, Dr. Pham, thank you very much for joining us from James Madison University.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks to Lieutenant Nathan Christensen in Bahrain and to Jeffrey Gettleman off the coast of Kenya and Somalia on that boat you heard earlier. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. What a story. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.